with all of the things that you charge, you have to make sure that you're not only paying your bills, but you're doing well. Because if you're not doing well, you might not be able to practice long. That's what happens. The people that undervalue their services or their products or everything that they're doing, they don't get to do it for very long. What my focus has always been, this is when I started making money, when my focus was no longer on making money, when it was on making people better, helping people and making people happy. It's as simple as that. I feel like in the universe, there needs to be an exchange. And this isn't all hippy-dippy or anything like that, but this is really real. You know the people that don't show up to your treatments? They're the people that you want to give them for free or discount. They're the ones that don't show up.
In this session, we're talking to Mark Brinson. He's the creator of Evil Bone Water, and he's been seeing patients for over 30 years. So here, we talk about business things like, should you offer package deals? Why you should work for someone else before starting your own clinic, selling products, and more. Then we get into some Evil Bone Water stuff, like the differences in herb quality and the Evil Bone Water manufacturing process. And then we talk about selling a practice. So stick around.
So the biggest confusion about me and my life, I guess, is where I'm located. So I live in St. Petersburg, Florida. My Evil Bone Water headquarters now is in St. Petersburg, Florida. St. Petersburg, Clearwater, same thing, kind of. My clinic has been and always will be in St. Simon's Island, Georgia, which is 250 miles away. It's a barrier island about 5 miles off the coast of causeways that you go through, smack in the middle between Jacksonville and Savannah. And it's just idyllic. It's probably the only place that I would ever want to treat patients. I hated treating in a city, but I love treating in a community. And so,
is it just kind of that small town feel that you're able to get?
You don't have to advertise. I mean, people, the follow up is fantastic. The word of mouth is fantastic. You don't have to convince anybody to come for treatment because they've already heard from five of their friends. If I tell somebody to come pick up herbs on Friday because we don't have them in yet, they have no problem with just stopping by. I mean, it's a 5 by 10 mile island. And so, with that, still one of the things that goes wrong with new people that are entering into the profession, even some older ones, is even then, with people that don't have as much to do, you still got to keep your door-to-door times really, really accurate. So we are 50 to 60 minutes door-to-door. We try to maintain that with everybody.
Yeah.
Everybody that's been there a long time, they know that it could be an hour and 15, but it normally wouldn't unless we're running behind. And sometimes we'll even call. But just in a smaller town, I hated working as a physician in a big city. The song and dance and the business of medicine are not my...
Yeah, like I noticed that going from, I started in San Diego and then I moved and joined some friends in Louisville, Kentucky. And it was just such a huge difference that
sure.
I wasn't sure if it was just a big city or if it was just like San Diego, like California people are flaky and stuff like that. But just, it's like, yeah, you really had to struggle a lot just to get people to come in. I'd have to send several text reminders and they still wouldn't show up. If they
proximity issue, no matter how far away they are, they're 30 minutes to an hour away. And that's a big deal.
Yeah. Referrals were really hard. I had people come in. It's like, oh yeah, give me a stack of your business cards. And they come in and be like, oh yeah, I handed out, he's a hairdresser. And it's like, I handed out 10-year cards to my clients. Did any of them call? I'm like, no, none of them did. And then I went to Kentucky and it's like, you treat one person and then the next week, seven members of their family are coming in or like they tell their entire church.
Or I was
like,
I was at the bowling alley last week and I heard about you from so and so.
Yeah. It's like I treated one guy for plantar fasciitis and then the entire factory floor came to see me for plantar fasciitis. So it was just like, so in the beginning, people were weird. It's like Louisville, Kentucky. Who's gonna get acupuncture in Louisville, Kentucky? You would think that Southern California would be prime market for hippie medicine, but actually, just because of that small town, it's so much easier. In that kind of environment.
What's so funny when you get a lot of times, like say for instance, the person that totally doesn't believe in what you're doing, et cetera, but is in a desperate spot. Hears from five of their friends, just go see them. And they come in and you help them. They end up becoming your biggest freaking advocates. They go back to their MD. Why didn't you send me to them before? Like they become like your staunch defenders in the community. And it's really pretty cool. Now I will say this, that sort of the chiropractic model of business has leaked into the acupuncture world these days, which is more package sales and more things like that. Those are going to work much better in a big city. You know, if you're all about the push, if you're all about the big package sale, if you're all about the marketing, if you like that kind of stuff, the big city is going to be better, because there's some things about that model. I'm not knocking the model per se. I'm just saying there's some things about that model that are going to rub some patients the wrong way. In a small town, when you rub patients the wrong way, it travels very quickly.
I was gonna ask how you felt about that, because it's like when I was talking to Patrick in Kentucky, he was like, "We never do that," and he says that establishes a lot of trust with their patients, where the patients know, "Oh, this guy's just trying to sell me a big package," and they really like that.
Yeah.
Whereas I've had other people where it's like, "This is the way to go. This is like you sell packages, and that's how you get consistency," and they don't do it any other way anymore.
Right.
So,
well, so I'm not gonna tell you that we've never sold packages in my clinic. So my it's cash practice. I decided to do that because when you accept insurance, it changes the tone and tenor of your office considerably. Insurance by design pits the physician, the provider, well, or the provider's staff, I should say. It pits them against the patient. And, you know, you can't tell the patient that you billed $350, but you only got paid $45. You can't tell them that by what they make us do. So we decided to opt out of that. And what I did with packages, there was one time that we did packages and that we're actually starting to do again with the new owner for the same reason. It's with cosmetic facial. Because the fact of cosmetic facial is you have to come in once or twice a week, and you have to come in for 10 sessions. And if you do, it is going to be amazing. Round about six, round about seven, you know, you start seeing it. Round about eight, other people start seeing it. And then round about nine, you're like, wow, this is really, really cool. And then after you do it, you know, you just do maintenance every once in a while. I mean, it really, really works. But I insisted that the packages were sold, because if it wasn't, and the person comes in for two or three times, they're never going to get to that amazing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so I considered that the same small town reputation business ethics, you know, as it was before. Now, not to say, I mean, and I think with packages, with larger packages for internal medicine stuff, it's all about the way that you deal with it. You know, you want these people. What I always say to people is, if you're going to do package sales, so say that you're in a big city, you're in San Diego, and package sales are going to be a big part of your generation income and stuff like that. And really, you know, you've got to be strong to give strength. So if you are struggling to pay your bill for your car, for your little whatever it is, I was going to say Hyundai, but those are kind of expensive now. You're going to pay it for your 1989 yeah. Corolla that you've got there. You know, if you're struggling to make that payment, you're not going to make for a great physician. You know what I mean? Because you're always going to be worried about money. And it's truly when we stop worrying about money that we start actually making money. You know what I mean? When you start worrying about how you're helping, a quality of service. But I will say, if you do packages, you should do them where you know that the people are going to be happy at every stage of this. So let me give you an example. So you see somebody and you're going to do that 10 package sale. You're going to do that 20 package sale, right? But you have a provision and you already know what it's going to be. You don't have to tell them about it, but you already know what it's going to be. If you knock it out of the park in three or four sessions, I mean, you just bang it out of the park in three or four sessions, you already know what you're going to tell them about how you're going to handle the future sessions. You know what I mean? If maybe some of them are a little bit transferable to their mate, maybe, you know, or one of their people in their family. Maybe it's transferred to maintenance. Maybe it's, you know, I don't know. I think that there's a way to do it and to maintain it and do it very ethically. And I only say that because there's a small percentage of clinics that do it where they're like, well, here you go, here's your 10 sessions, and somebody, you know, gets better after three, and they're like, I want my refund. I'm like, well, we don't do refunds, and blah 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 blah, and it just doesn't lead to it. It's that's the very chiropractic model version of it that doesn't lead to a lot of good faith. And the thing is, if you have bad faith with one of us, because we are our own little group of witch doctors, they're apprehensive about going to the other witch doctors. So.
And that's kind of what I was thinking, is that that package thing makes sense, where it's like if you're doing facial acupuncture and there's a set series of treatments, or maybe you have like an IVF package where you know you want to do this many treatments before, this many after.
Stroke is a good one.
Yeah. But I was always curious about that. Like, if somebody comes in for back pain and you fix them in two treatments, like, what do you do for the other six? Like, do you just say, oh, you have to do maintenance, or?
Yeah. Well, and that's it. And I will say that the other one that, yeah, gosh, it's so underserved, but we used to also offer a package for, like, the only people who would, were stroke patients. Because I know that if I can get them in for scalp, and most of the time I just sit my stroke patients in the lobby because it's 45-minute scalp treatments where they're just like, you sit and read a book, watch something, play on your phone, do whatever. But I know if we can get them in and get them in often, I would always make it like a juicy deal for them, because we need to see them 10 times. We need to nail it. But yeah, like, you know, I've always said my whole life in business that I have an angel on my shoulder already. But I need to have the devil on my other shoulder that's telling me the things that would just totally rip people off. Because if I find a balance between two of them, I'll say like, no. But then I'll go like, I could do that. Or I could do that under this situation. I think learning the package sale method and learning that type of it, like the real, real sharky version too, I think has a lot of validity to it. Because if you learn it, that doesn't mean you have to do it or you have to do all phases of it. That just means that you have the tools in your toolbox and you can pull them out selectively when you need them. I mean, because ultimately, like I said, you don't want to be poor. You know, you don't have to drive a Lamborghini or a Ferrari, but I think that with doing what we do, you can definitely, you know, drive the same kind of cars that other physicians drive. You can have the same type of lifestyle that other physicians have, and you shouldn't feel guilty about that either.
Yeah, and it's like you need money to feed the mission.
You do. Otherwise, you just don't do it for long.
Yeah, you need to pay your rent, if nothing else. Even if you don't want to like buy the fancy car, you at least need to pay your rent.
Yes.
So I think you've had a lot of changes going on, selling your clinic, upgrades to Evil Bone Water. I do want to get to that eventually. I thought maybe first we could talk about some more business stuff, some more
absolutely
practice management stuff. For everybody, how long have you been in practice?
So I guess I've been in natural medicine in one way or another. You know, I was talking about this with staff when we were going to sell the clinic and with my wife and stuff like that earlier in the month. And I kept telling people, haven't I been here for like 10 or 11 years on St. Simon's? And they're like, you've been saying that for several years. I think during the pandemic, I kind of lost like a block of 3 years that I just smushed and consider all like one. So seriously, I've been there for 15. I've been treating patients in natural medicine for 33 years or something crazy like that.
So there was a pre-acupuncture?
Oh, yeah. I was a trainer specializing in rehab and strength and conditioning coach. Then I was a massage therapist in rehab. Then I was a physical therapist. That's when I went back after 900 hours of osteopathic internship, 600 chiropractic. I went back for Dr. Royal Medicine after becoming very disenfranchised with the osteopathic education in America. I didn't know that it was no longer hands-on. After all the guys I learned on were very, very hands-on, and I wanted to be an osteopath. But then I was getting in all these, you had to send away back then for the curriculum and stuff like that.
Like a mail course?
Yeah, you had to mail it. So that was, I guess, 94, 95. And they were all MD programs with like six natural classes, maybe one hands-on. So anyway, it was not my first choice. But yeah, I've been doing this for quite some time. I've been a doctor of oriental medicine since 2000, and had a couple of clinics to begin with that were really shoestring type clinics. And the success of those, my heart and my life of being poor got in the head of me making money in those. And so there's some ways around that too that I figured out on my own, but there's also some shortcuts that people can take to get there quicker.
So yeah, it's not just like you've been in acupuncture practice, but you've had clinical experience running a clinic, seeing patients even before that.
Yeah, I worked in a lot of settings that I would not choose for myself now. But I will tell you that if you are a newer person and you're contemplating owning a business, if you're contemplating having your own practice, et cetera, I cannot recommend enough that you go to a busy clinic, whatever the clinic happens to be, and you tell them that you're willing to commit 1 or 2 years to them if they will teach you as much as they can. And let them know in the beginning, look, I will move on, probably move on after this time. I'm wanting to learn as much as I can. But it was actually that happened to me clinically that ended up making me a clinical success. I committed to Sue Ho. She's not an online type person, so I don't know if anybody will ever even know who Sue Ho is. But to helping her out after I had done, I spent about a decade teaching all over the place, well, all over the world, hands-on type work. And so I decided I need to work for somebody else. So I think it was one day a week that I treated for her for a year, and she would work me too. I think she would have me working anywhere from 3 to 5 rooms with full Chinese medicine with like 25 to 30 patients a day. She sold packages. She did the whole song and dance, the whole bit. But I was divorced from that in a sense because I just did my work, right? But I told her I would commit to her for a certain amount of time, for a certain number of years or whatever. And I did. And I gave her, I made her a lot of money, but it didn't really matter because I made myself a lot of money too. Like when you see, you know, even if the percentage is low, if you see 25, 30 people a day, you are going to make good money, right?
Yeah. I mean, that's one of those like hokey business things they say is learn before you earn. So it's like you were focusing on learning the business rather than trying to earn a lot of money right up front.
Yeah, exactly. And so I always say that you should be, if you're at a job, you should be doing one of a few things. You should either be learning a lot, making a lot of money, or if you can get both at the same time, that's when you're gold. And so that was one of those things where at the end of that, it was a very, very equitable like leaving situation. She even actually loaned me money to set up my first herbal pharmacy in St. Simon's Island. So I needed, for Guangxi Tong Herbs, I needed like, I don't know, a couple $1,000 to have their full beginner pharmacy. And she was like, I'll gladly loan you the money at, you know.
Well, that's good because that kind of segues into one of the first things I wanted to ask you. Basically, I tried to go through Facebook and find all your comments, and I thought we could just discuss some of your comments. It turns out it's actually very hard to stalk comments on Facebook. So some of this is just coming from memory. So if I get something wrong, it's just coming from my memory. But one of the things that comes up a lot on in these Facebook groups is somebody will post a screenshot of a job listing where somebody will say, oh, we're looking to hire a new acupuncturist in our busy clinic. Well, we want all these qualifications. And by the way, the pay is $20 an hour. And it's always kind of funny to see the reactions to that because you get the new people and the people just starting out who are like, that's ridiculous. That's insulting. How could this is ruining our profession? How could they do that? And then on the other side, you get people who have actually run clinics for a long time and hired people. And they're kind of like, well, actually, I'm not sure you realize how much overhead is or how much it actually costs to hire someone. And I think in one of those, you made some comment that was along the lines of a lot of times people who are just starting out don't realize that they lack a lot of skills that would make them valuable to an established clinic, that there's a lot of hand-holding, a lot of training, and it's actually that it drains a lot of resources by hiring a new person. So what are the skills that new graduates are lacking that they need to know?
So here's what people don't understand. It is an extremely big gamble to bring in a new person into a clinic. If the person's practiced less than 5 years or they've never owned a clinic before, it is a big gamble, and it's a gamble, honestly, that hasn't really ever paid off for me all that well. I've tried to mold great physicians. I've tried to make them the best that they can. I've tried to pay them as much of a percentage as I could, actually up to the percentage that I pay myself, which I think is more than fair, but is very, very hard for the person that hasn't owned a business to see until they do own a business, right? But so here's what the real issue is, that here's the X factor that's hard to put into play. And every single person listening to this that's had a clinic and had any type of employees will tell you this. I mean, will agree with me. This is not like they're going to agree with me 50% or 60%. This is going to be like a 98% agreement rate. So what happens is I bring somebody in new, and now they're going to be taking patients that I could have seen. My rate that I take a patient to what I call fruition, which means that they are better, is over 90%. All right. My percentage of patients that come to me more than two times is well over 90%. You get your odd person that comes in and you don't connect, or something's weird, or they were there against their will, and you know, you might not see them again, et cetera. That does happen, and you can almost tell immediately when they see you. But here's what will happen. You'll get somebody new that comes in, and their fruition, you know, rate to fruition is like 30%. Their rate that somebody sees them, we actually had one person who the rate that they saw her for more than two visits was like 15%. This is after a year.
And it's not like she was getting amazing results after two treatments. And no. Didn't need to come back.
There was just something that wasn't right, right? So we're pumping people to these people. We're giving them people that I could have helped, that I could have taken to fruition. I could have helped. They could have stayed on long term as really good patients for quite some time. And now that's their impression of Chinese medicine. You know what I mean? And so listen, that's not going to be every single person, but I hate to say it, for people that are like, you're 3 to 5 years out, that's you. That was me. You know what I mean? What took me when I was 3 years out, even though I had all of those years of hands-on skill before, what takes me now 2-3 sessions took me then 5-6 sessions very, very easily. So that's where that you have to learn to be the physician. You have to learn to be the person that's of authority, gently, but more important than that, you have to learn to be a coach. You are a cheerleader. You don't need to lie to them, but you need to be really honest. What I tell people is when they first come in and I'm treating something that's weird. It used to be 20 years ago, everything I treated was weird. You know, we're the witch doctor, so it was all weird. But then when you skip forward all these years, especially because I've seen it so many times, it's not weird anymore. I only get like maybe 10% of weird stuff. I get 50% family medicine. I get 20% that I'm like, I've seen it before, you know. But when they come in, I give an honest, you know, opinion. In that first one time that I talked to him, I say, look, what's really going to be telling is when I treat you. When I treat you, it's as diagnostic as anything else. So let's give you a treatment or two and let's see. If I treat you more than once or twice and nothing's happening, we're doing something wrong. We'll figure it out. So do you hear what I did with that? I gave you hope. All right. I didn't give you false hope. If somebody comes in and I'm like, I freaking really don't know, but we'll throw some sessions at it and see. There's once in a blue moon that I say that. I'm like, this is one of those things that's really, really hard. We're not going to know for 4 or 5 sessions. You know what I mean? Still encourage them. But with most things, I try to give them a really honest opinion. And then after that first session, I'm like, look, you responded really a lot better than I thought to. Or I'm like, look, you did not respond as well as I thought you were going to respond. You know, we're going to need, either you're going to need to get a massage between now and the time you see me next time, or we are going to need to do a couple sessions just of groundwork so I can get down to the spine or get down to the problem, et cetera. So I guess they used to call this bedside manner.
Yeah.
But that I wish was emphasized in schools so much more. There's a book, and I'm gonna say the name of the book. There's probably other ones that are better because it is dry as it can be. But it's called Motivational Interviewing. And I used to make some of my people read the book Motivational Interviewing, because what it is it's basically kind of neuro-linguistic programming. It's not what you say to people, it's how you say things. And it's the way that you word things, because what you're ultimately doing is you're trying to, with your words, you are trying to create and compel a reaction to them, or actually not a reaction. You're trying to compel an action. You're trying to present something in such a way that they're like, all right, you know, this may take a couple times, but we are a team. We're going to work together and we're going to do this. And so if you're only seeing people 1, 2, or 3 times in your clinic and you never see them again, that's the X factor that's missing. You are not motivating that person. Now, there's other little things, but I think a lot of times, like with the advent, like with the internet really exploding, we've overcome some of those. So some of it is like just telling people, look, I need to see you three times. When can I see you next? I overcame that shyness by hiring a front desk person. So if you're one of those people that doesn't like money, or you don't like to talk about people rescheduling or asking them, just hire a really good front desk, because then you're divorced from the whole thing. It's money well spent. But yeah, I mean, we're coaches, you know, we're cheerleaders. We're not liars, but we're also, you know, the physician. We're the doc. They're coming to us to look for what their progress is going to be, you know, what is going to happen. So if you're just willy-nilly about it, then you're going to end up in that case where I don't know why people aren't coming back. That's why they aren't coming back.
So would you say the sticking point isn't necessarily that your results aren't good enough? It's not like, oh, on my first treatment, I need a 50% reduction in pain. Otherwise, the person's not going to believe it and they're not going to come back. It's more about how you present that. Even if you don't get really good results, if you present it correctly, they'll still come back?
To an extent. I do something with new patients the first time that I call the wow factor. And this is a little trick. Now, with what you just asked me, this is extremely true. I will be very honest and tell people, I'm not sure how well you're going to do after this. But then there's sometimes that I'll say, look, or more than that, I'll normally say, we need to see how you react to this treatment to see if our diagnosis is correct, if my prognosis is good, et cetera. But what I will say sometimes too is I'll say, I expect this to be really good. I expect you to be 70% better. You know, I'll tell them, you know, very honestly. But that wow factor that I say sometimes is with certain patients, let's say for instance, somebody comes in and they've tried everybody, right? And this is just part of the coaching thing. They've tried everybody. They've tried all sorts of things. They don't think anything can help their whatever problem that they happen to have. But I know I can, right? So I do not treat the root. That's what everybody says. Get the tongue and the pulse and treat the root and blah, blah, blah. But if I see all of these scattered patterns all over the place, I call those ghost patterns. They're not running. They're so far out of whack that they're not running just plus or minus yin or yang out of balance. They are running in a totally different pattern that's not even their body. So I'll look at all of them and I'll say, all right, what can I do with acupuncture and herbs or hands-on work? What can I do that is going to make this person go, wait a minute, something happened. Something, it moved, you know, whatever it was. So say, for instance, it's digestion, you know, and they've always had loose stool. I'll give them something that I know for a fact between now and the next time they see me is going to clear up their loose stool. There's no question about it. You know what I mean? So I call that the wow factor, because if in that first session you can do something that's going to take care of half their symptoms, not only does it wow them and they'll go, wait, I'm in the right place, but it also gets them closer to away from the ghost pattern and into the actual just really out of balance pattern that they're in. So your clinical picture becomes much more clear, rather than when they come in before with everything circled or everything marked and you don't know what to do. So they may never see that formula again. They may never get a treatment similar to that again.
So is that throwing everything at the branch and not like, let's not necessarily worry about the root right now. Let's throw everything at the branch to see if we can get that to change?
A little bit. I mean, a little bit. I mean, you still can't ignore what the root is. You just can't, because let's say, for instance, that the person has that they have a terrible spleen qi deficiency, but I know that their problem, maybe it's plaque psoriasis or something. I know that their problem is rooted in blood deficiency. If I go ahead and throw a bunch of blood tonics at them, their stool is going to be terrible because they're just cloying. They're awful. It's not going to work. So every once in a while, I'll just look at it and go, well, look, they've had this for a long time that's really bothering them, even though it wasn't their main complaint. I know by the time they come in next time, they won't have that anymore. That's all it takes. That is all it takes. Because when they go to, think about it. Okay, so what do you get when you go to an MD?
Usually I get a prescription.
Well, that's it, because that's what they do. You're going to get a test, a prescription, or physical therapy. Those are the three things. Those are their tools, right? Will you get better? You might. Will it be patched? Always. They're always looking to patch something unless they can test something that they can send you to a surgeon and they can fix. That I'm not knocking the system as much as I'm saying that's what the system is. I mean, if you go to an MD, you're going to get a prescription, a test, or physical therapy, right? So with us, it's actually a place, and that's what they don't realize, especially people that are a little bit desperate. And when I say desperate, I don't want to mean that as like a bad term. Like a lot of these people that become our best champions are the ones that come to us and they've just, they've exhausted all their other resources. So they're like putty in our hands in a way, which is kind of cool. So they're willing to do herbs when they never would have before or whatever. So what I want to do is I want to show them like, I will affect this week. You know what I mean? Because there's almost always somebody with a complex medical condition that you can affect this week, even if you have to cheat. So let's say, for instance, it's digestive or whatnot, and you know it's the medications causing whatever it is, and you're just like, look, I want you to take a vial of curing pills every day in the morning for 7 days until you see me. You know when they come back, it's going to be better. And they're going to go, oh, well, wait a second. You have to have something that gives them that confidence in our medicine, which is also one of those evil bone water things. That's you need emissaries. You need your heavy hitters. You need your things that you can give this person. And then they go, well, wait a second. Maybe I don't need a medication, or I don't need a test, or I don't need to nail down exactly what to call this. Because you see those people for years that go through this whole thing about, I just need a diagnosis. I need a diagnosis. And then they get some weird ass diagnosis that you haven't heard of before, which of course they come in and they tell you the initials like you should know it. You're like, it's the DBSSSSS. And you're like, I'll be back in a minute. but then it doesn't get them anywhere. You know, it gets them straight back to where they were before on prednisone or, you know, whatever. So yeah, that's what I would say, that for the new person especially, you need to be impactful and impactful soon. And you need to put pressure on yourself to be impactful. And if you're not impactful and you don't think you can be impactful, get the skills to be impactful. I mean, or at least learn 20 impactful formulas, you know what I mean? Or at least learn 20 impactful acupuncture combinations, 20 impactful hands-on techniques, you know what I mean? Like, just get something where that person's going to be like, oh, wait a minute, I might be in the right place, right?
Yeah, and so I've been listening to a lot of business podcasts lately, and so it's like thinking of this in business terms, I feel like what we're talking about, our root problem here is churn. That is the rate that people drop out and don't come back, and having high churn is a very bad thing. It affects your lifetime value. If people come in for one treatment and quit, that's not as good for coming in six treatments in a row. And sometimes a metric that people use for this is time to value or time to first value. Like, how long does it take before they see the result that they want? And so a good way to decrease your churn and get to people to stay longer is maybe you don't give them the full win right away, but you can at least give them a small win that they know that they've gotten some value, and that will make them more confident coming in the future. So maybe it's like if you were a trainer and it's like, oh, I want to lose 50 pounds and be able to bench three plates. It's like, well, let's see how quickly you can get down 2 or 3 pounds, and that causes a lot of motivation and they'll want to stick with it and come back. Is that kind of what we're talking about? Like just getting some small win so they come back.
Well, so, but I can also give you a little scripting on that too, because I understand what you're saying. And so I think in our profession, and I just want to encourage the newer people too, that if you're in our profession and you're worried about churn, our medicine works. All right. Our medicine works. The herbs work. The acupuncture works. The Tweenaw works. It works. And I hate to say this, but if it's not working, you're just not doing it right. It sucks to say that, but you just have to, increase your skills. You have to increase your knowledge of it, and you will do it. It's not called a practice for nothing, right? So what really creates churn in our profession is if you don't do it right, or if you don't communicate clearly with the patient. Now, how impactful do you need to be? I tell patients this, especially the ones that you're talking about, Nigel. So if I've got somebody that they come in and I'm like, I'm going to knock this out of the park. This is stupid. So I'll give you an example. There's problems that happen with the tarsals and the carpals that go out of place. It's acute. It feels like this awful hand pain. They don't know what to do. Doesn't show up on x-ray or whatever. I look at it and I'm like, all right, we're going to fix this today. Okay, but what I do say, because it's just a matter of manipulating them, stretching them, and you're doing the whole bit, doing some acupuncture, maybe not even follow up with herbs except for some topicals, and you're it's really a done deal. But I tell people, even the really easy ones, I say, look, we're probably going to knock this out today, but I would like to try to see you at least two or three times in order to make sure it doesn't happen again. I'm not worried with getting this back in place or fixing this today. I want to take care of what led up to it happening. Because if I do that, then you'll see me in the future, but you'll see me for something totally different. You know what I mean? And that is what creates the family medicine patients that are there for 15 years, like in my place. Like, I'm so busy with family medicine patients or regular patients that I hardly have time for any new patients, because that's it. You correct something, you correct it efficiently, and what would be considered churn turns into a long-term patient. You know what I mean? But part of that is you do have to let them understand a bit how Chinese medicine works, not going down the qi road, but saying like, look, we're going to make you feel better now, but we really need to correct what led up to it. 95% of the patients are super good with that. Women, 95% of the time, more than men. Men, you get the knife and you pull it out of them, and then they're like, oh, I'm freaking fine, and now I'm good. And then you come back, they come back when they're horrible, and you have to see them two or three times. Yeah, because the knife's still in there. But yeah, that's you know, that's a good point. How do you handle that?
No, I like that line. So what was it? It's like we can treat this now, but I want to treat the thing that led up to it.
Yeah, exactly. I'm not concerned with getting you better today. I'm concerned with getting better what led up to it, so I don't have to treat you for the same thing again. And I've got different versions of that, but you can tell I've said it a million times to a million people. But that's really it. And that's something that somebody can wrap their head around. They're like, okay, well, I really don't want to be in here continually, because that's what happens. A lot of people seasonally, celestially, you know, every summer, every winter, every whatever, they get all of a sudden this acts up. This happens to me every single year. So, you know, getting them fine in easy cases is okay. But you're like, I just want to make sure that we correct the pattern so it doesn't happen again.
Okay, yeah, I like that. I like being able to steal phrases from people that are useful, because otherwise I'm like, oh yeah, well, we treat the branch this time, but in order to treat the root, we need to have you on Duho Jishong Tong for the next 6 months, so you need to come back. And like, oh
yeah, and they're just like,
let me steal your simple phrasing.
And that, you know, there's a before you ask the next question, there's a good bit of something that goes with that. So it used to be 20 years ago, we had to convince everybody to come in. Everybody need convincing. They need explanations. They need all sorts of things. They don't need that now. And if they do, they're not really ready for my clinic yet, because the internet is vast and you can see a million things on how Chinese medicine works and this and that. If somebody comes in and asks me for an explanation a little bit further on something, I don't mind giving it to them. But in today's, it's so easy compared to the way it used to be. I don't use any of our Chinese medicine terms for the most part, unless they want them. Or unless they become a longer-term patient. So a lot of these people that are coming in, we have people that come in for family medicine that I might actually only see every few months, but they get herbs fairly regularly. And I want them to know what hot means and what cold means and what damp means and what dry means, et cetera, and wind means. Because when they do, they start to make the connections with the herbs. They're like, okay, well, that's what I need. I feel like I've got a lot of dampness. So they start speaking our language. But for most of them, they're just not going to understand our language. So I try to stay out of that unless they ask for it. If they ask for it, I'll tell them whatever they want to know.
So if somebody does find themselves in that situation where they're just not doing it right, they're not getting the results that they should be getting, they're not knocking it out of the park, and they've already graduated, they've already been in practice for a year or two, are they just shit out of luck? Or how do you, like, once you've graduated, how do you learn to do it right?
So what I do tell people is this. Again, they don't call this a practice for nothing. It takes a little bit. So when people come into my clinic, I tell them between 3 and 8 sessions, we're going to get you better or so significantly improved that you can take care of yourself, or you're going to know you're on the path to getting better. So now, I will give some caveats with that, with certain things like, say, neuropathy. And like with neuropathy, I tell people, look, we might treat you 3 or 4 times and nothing happens, and then the 5th time everything starts to happen. with neuropathy and in me, the way I practice with neuropathy, if we start getting results, it's going to go great. If we don't, meh. And I tell them that. But I also tell them this, and this is a standard. You don't have to be there in your first 5 years of practice. You really don't. But this is a standard that I really, really believe is true. If you're not getting results and you've treated somebody two times in a row, three times in a row, and they're saying nothing's happened, wrong diagnosis, wrong treatment, or there's something overriding it. This stuff works that well that I will tell people that. I tell them in the beginning, I'm like, look, and you can't necessarily compare if you've been treating 5 years to somebody that's been treating 30 years. It's not going to be exactly the same way. And there's not. But there are comparisons to be made. So your timeline might be a little bit different. But I tell people right up front, I'm like, look, let's say it's a really confusing case. It's one of my like 5% of the weirdos, right? I tell them, treatment is as diagnostic as anything. What normally happens is we'll layer something off and get a clear clinical picture. Layer, clear clinical picture. The last thing that we end up with is usually what started all of this, right? I'll tell them that. I'll say also, but if we treat you two or three times in a row, one or two times in a row, and nothing happens, I'm missing it. And that really is, especially if you're using herbs and hands-on work. If you treat somebody more than a couple times and nothing happened, you have gotten the wrong diagnosis. You've gotten the wrong formula. If I give somebody a formula and it doesn't do anything, something is really wrong. Now, as you get older and you get more seasoned in the profession, what normally is going wrong is there's a piece of the puzzle that you're missing, or it's a medication. So when I say a piece of the puzzle, there's a tumor. You know what I mean? There's a medical condition that's undiagnosed. There is a medication that's causing this, that you cannot override a medication sometimes. It is too strong and too powerful for you to be able to do that. Now, a hint on that too is every single MD looks in the primary side effects of medications. What you need to do is look in the secondary and the tertiary effects, because almost always when a person comes in like that and I'm like, you know what? I think a medication is overriding it. It's sitting right there in the tertiary effects. It's right there. It's right in the sidebar on Google. And then you're like, ah. And most of the time, depending on what the medication is, you get them off of it for a week while you fill it in with it herbally. And they're like, oh, yep, everything's better. Then you send them back to their primary and see if they can get off that medication, et cetera. So I guess that's what I really want to impart to you is this stuff works. I remember questioning it myself in my first few years of practice. Is it working? No, it's just I sucked kind of. I was good at the hands-on, and I was okay at the herbs, but at the acupuncture, I wasn't really that great. But it works. So if it doesn't, then that's what Nicholas was talking about. Then you need to seek out some stuff that does. Seek out something that's really impactful. Seek out, a type of work that you've heard about before that gets practitioners, day after they get out of the training, they're doing it. I will say with that, in that vein, sometimes we're talking about shortcuts. But sometimes shortcuts are good when you're first starting out. So let me give you an example of that. I don't use that much electric stim. I don't think that electric stim is bad. I think it's extremely valid. I think it is exceedingly impactful to the patient, right? As is dry needling, actually, exceedingly impactful, right? I don't think it's bad, but I don't, because when somebody comes in and say it's that wrist that we talked about that was out of place, I don't want to use anything in the beginning because I don't want to mask the symptoms. I don't want to patch the symptoms. I want to see if my treatment is getting it better, right? So sometimes on musculoskeletal, since that was kind of my specialty, I don't even use herbs to begin with because I want to see if my treatment is impactful and is actually making things better. I've always got those in reserve. The time that I will say that I make an exception to that is if somebody comes in an acute situation, musculoskeletally, and I know what's going on. I know this patient. I know who they are. I know that their L5 is forward a centimeter and it's just jammed. I might use electric stim in order to patch that, get the spasm down enough that I can actually either manipulate it, or it'll go back on its own, or the acupuncture will pull it back. Or so as kind of an emergency type treatment, I will do that. Or, of course, there's certain protocols that sometimes have to do with stroke or with fertility, et cetera, facial, that do sometimes require electro. But yeah, so that's what you do. If you're like, well, gosh, is it that I suck? First of all, bravo to you for even thinking that. Because most people can't think, oh, I kind of suck. And everybody does. I'm learning stuff with my business these days. I'm learning stuff that I really suck at. But you know what? A month or two from now, I won't suck at it. And that's how you have to look at it. You have to say, what skills can I add that are going to most efficiently get me, just quick, stop that churn? You know what I mean? Why is the churn there? And if the churn is because of your personality, get some personality. I have a Dr. Mark personality, and that is not who I am. If you just find me at Publix or at whatever, I'm kind of a lot quieter and.
Yeah, I was gonna say sometimes it's just like you smell. Like people don't want to be in a room with you because you stink.
Right.
But no, I am glad that at the beginning of all this, we said something about like just going to work for someone for a year or two. And so I'm glad you mentioned that, even if it's low pay, because I've had a lot of people asking me for advice. And nowadays, just my number one business advice is just go work for someone else.
Someone successful.
Even if it's shit pay, that's okay. You're there to learn, not to earn. And you can think of it like your fifth year internship. Really, in your last year of school, you were paying to be an intern. Well, now you're getting paid minimum wage to be an intern, and that's slightly better.
Yeah.
But some of those business things, like just the scheduling, the how to talk to patients, the words you can use to say you need to come back next week, like that's worth gold. And so just suck it up for a year of minimum wage in order to learn those things.
And watching the flow of a successful clinic, because a successful clinic, the flow of it is beautiful, from the way the front desk handles things to the way that the people take their people back. And it's really like this dance that I don't think that you can get that from paper or from a seminar. You have to kind of see it. But also I've just come to this more recently. And I think it would have helped me in my own endeavors of hiring people in the past. I really think that we should start, as people that hire or people that are looking for something like that, I think that we should start looking into like 1-year commitments or 2-year commitments or things like, or year at a time commitments. Because I think it takes a little bit of pressure off and lets the person on both ends just kind of say, okay, you know, I've got a year. I've got a year to make this a happy workplace. You've got a year. You've got a year to make yourself a good physician. You know what I mean? And then at the end of the year, let's see if we want to renew it or not. My wife does that every year that we're married. I'm asking, are you going to renew me this year? She's normally like, yeah, I think so. I normally ask in advance. But yeah, I think that's important because, and that's what the new people don't understand, that it is a real, it's a big investment for a clinic to take you on as a newer person. And they also really don't make any money. It's hard to fathom, but they really don't make any money until you see about at least 20 patients a week. And sometimes that can take a year to get to comfortably. And like I said, the potential, not only lost income, but the loss of the patient that doesn't get help is like a big deal. So you guys are both doing each other a favor. You know, you're doing them a favor by making them some money when you get over 20, and they're doing you a favor by teaching you the ropes. So I would love to see more people enter into that, into year commitments at a time, and also really love to see more people exit it on really, really good terms, because that's awesome. I've always exited mine on really good terms. And it sets you up for the future. You know, I've got the places that I exited with in the past, and it hasn't been a ton because I've worked with for myself a lot. If I called them up and wanted to do a business venture with them, or wanted some support for them, or they wanted some support for me, I have no problem doing that, because we were very upfront about our relationship.
Another thing that has impressed me seeing your Facebook responses is it seems like you're very into systems. Like if you have a patient who doesn't show up or a patient who cancels or a patient who doesn't reschedule, you have like you have a system of we're going to sit down and diagnose this, talk to the front desk person, talk to the like what caused this problem. Can you talk a little bit about that?
So when people look at successes of different places, there's so many ways that you can look at things and say it was an overnight success. So Evil Bone Water is a really, really good example of that. We started 6 years ago on the porch, just a little over 6 years ago. And now we're about to hit 2,000 clinics, if you can believe that. I didn't even know there were 2,000 clinics, right? And so every state and international and we've done it without really advertising, just the honest way and things like that. But it wasn't an overnight success. There's by no means. So what it was is it's for, you know, 30 years of me grinding. In my 20s, I studied everything business that I could get my hands on. And honestly, everything brewing and distilling I could get my hands on too. These were everything that I do now is studies that I did in my 20s, but I was too poor to actually implement any of it.
Yeah.
It was just, I had a, you know, there's this thing with life where a lot of times you have a lot of time or you have a lot of money, but it's rare that you have both at the same time. Well, this is when I had a lot of time. So I just pumped it into, you know, everything I could learn with business, which is cool because now I can't necessarily remember what I did this past week, but I'll come up with this great idea that was actually Wayne Dyer in like the 90s or something that I'm like, oh, this is a great idea. Let's implement this. But it's floating around back there in my brain, right? So systems, I was fascinated from my early 20s, maybe my late teens, with franchises and the way that franchises operated because they were a newer thing back then. You know, before the 90s, before the 80s really, you just had a lot of mom and pop type things. And then you had McDonald's that came out with the first, you know, franchise and they had a freaking amazing business model, which was, I don't know if you knew this in the beginning, I don't know if they do this now, but they would always own the property. And they would franchise you the business and the location. So what happens if you fail on your franchise and don't pay them? They just stick another franchisee in there. You know what I mean? And they always own the property, which we can talk about at another date. But I highly, highly recommend that as an acupuncture physician. I wish I would have done this decades earlier. If you can build a clinic, make it super strong, and then you can buy the building, sell the clinic, rent to the person that you sell it to at a great rate so that you can help them succeed. If they ever do fail, you have an instant backup. You can put another clinic in there. You know what I mean? If that is a fantastic business model, but that's a whole nother thing. So back to systems. For franchises, you have to have symptoms. You can't go to a McDonald's in Wisconsin and have one of their burgers and then go to one in Palatka, Florida and have it taste different. It's got to be the same. Otherwise, it just doesn't work, right? So while there's something about that are bad, like as far as like clinics go, a lot of it is the art of the practitioner. There are some that have actually overcome that. You've heard of Rolfing before? So Rolfing with bodywork, it's a little heavy-handed in my opinion. I like structural integration more. But Rolfing is essentially the McDonald's of bodywork. It is 10 steps to the perfect posture to working every single part of the body. If I get 1, 2, 3 in Chicago and I get 4, 5, 6 in Palatka, I didn't miss a beat. It's the same as it would be, right? So that's one thing about franchising. But what I like about franchising, or fascinated about it is that it's systems that allow for growth. So what are we doing? How are we doing it? And is it the optimal way to do it? So when something comes up that's a problem in the clinic, here's how you can translate that practically, whether you have a clinic or whether you have a topical business or a herb product business or whatever it is. And my staff all knows this, you know, like I said, teamwork makes the dream work. When you come up against a problem, they're like, well, let's just do this or let's just do that. They get a little frustrated with me sometimes because I'll marinate on something for just a little bit. You know, this problem that somebody has. So say somebody 2 times in a row had a package that wasn't delivered. Or let's say that in the clinic, where all of a sudden, instead of 3 to 5 no-shows a week, we all of a sudden are at 8 or 9 no-shows a week. Solving the problem is easy, but figuring out how to solve it perfectly so that you never have to think about figuring that out again is much, much more valuable. So if I can figure out what went wrong, how it went wrong, the best way to handle it, now we have a protocol. We have a protocol that can go into our manuals or it can go into our subconscious that if this happens again, they don't have to ask me. They don't have to ask somebody else. We don't have to have a meeting about it. They just know, oh, we did this before. Let's make it happen. So systems are so, so, so important. So I think the one that you were talking about specifically has to do with no-shows. And so what we found, there are some interesting weeks as far as owning a clinic go that I've gotten even more insight into once I have a topical business. So, you know, with 2,000 clinics, we were very, very excited to get some demographics of when our peaks and when our valleys were and stuff like that. They mirror clinic peaks and valleys exactly. They do. It's crazy. I just did that yesterday with my best friend Ty over here. And I was like, wow, that's what I thought. But we finally had 3 years of Shopify analytics where we could like look at it. And the curve is exact. And a lot of it goes around when kids get in and out of school. It's as simple as that. It's the same way with clinics or holidays. So let's take those weeks out of the equation. Let's take the weeks out that are the anomalies, right? If you have something that goes wrong and is different, all of a sudden you normally get maybe 3 no-shows a week, and all of a sudden it's up to 5, it's up to 6, it's up to 7. Something happened. Somebody somewhere broke down. And I don't mean to point any fingers. And that's how you have to approach these conversations that you have with staff. You can't approach them like, you know, somebody did something wrong, which is completely puts everybody at odds. That's not the way it is. I would approach them often by saying, look, I think I might be doing something different or different, you know, wrong. And a lot of times it's something so small and so innocent. But if you ignore it, what happens is it just continues and it continues to get worse. And then we see posts on Facebook like, I can't figure out why 10 people didn't come in this week. 10 people didn't come in this week, probably because you just stopped telling them that they need to come in again. Or, you know, that's an oversimplification. Or that maybe you switched over to an electronic system where they were supposed to do it on their own and there's a problem, there's a glitch in that matrix. You know what I mean? Or all of a sudden, your business, other business, your sales are off like 30% or 40%, you know, maybe something's wrong somewhere. So I think that even if you don't set out in your business to have systems in place, which I think is a mistake, but if you don't even set out that way, I think that you should handle every problem like that, because otherwise, when the same problem comes up again, you have to have the same conversations with yourself. You have to do the same, like, you know, running a business, having a clinic, it's a practice, right? And it's constantly sort of evolving, but you're constantly learning. And make sure that you tell your staff and the people that work with you that too. You're like, look, I don't care if on this stupid problem, we spend 2 days figuring it out, because next time it comes up, we will spend 2 minutes. Because we know we are right. We know all the, you know, the ins and outs of it. So yeah, you're that was insightful of you to figure that out.
So do you have places that, like, I guess what's your default place to look if you get no shows, cancellations, things like that? Do you have a checklist you go through? What's that?
So number one and first and foremost, because my clinic is in a I would say it's kind of a vacation place, but it's weird because there's a lot of travel people that come there. Probably 2/3 of the houses on St. Simon's Island are people's second or third homes. So we know that if it's a holiday week, it's just going to be a weird schedule. But what we've also found is if we decide that we're going to allow ourselves to be exceptionally flexible those weeks, it all turns out, it all evens out. It's just harder on us. But like, say it's going to be Groundhog Day on Monday, I guarantee you people are going to be traveling to St. Simon's for freaking Groundhog Day or something. Okay, you know what I mean? Yeah. It really is that weird. So what we decide is that on those weeks, we know we're going to get weird cancellations, but we'll just hustle. You know, we don't hustle typically, but we'll hustle on those weeks, right? But let's say, for instance, that you're specifically talking about cancellations or you're talking about people not rescheduling. People not rescheduling is a little more serious than just cancellations. Okay, so if we're getting the occasional cancellation, there's things that come up. There's reasons that come up, all right? You also have to acknowledge and recognize your what I call gold star patients. So if they're repeat offenders, you may have to figure out something that you need to do about that. There may need to be penalties involved. There's a couple that I've had forever that I just keep on the schedule because I'm like, if I have a break that hour, it's not going to be the worst thing in the world because I'm already scheduled, you know, busy in the morning. But it is something, that's where an amazing front desk person comes in because they already kind of know. But, you know, let's say, for instance, that you normally have two or three reschedules, no shows a week, then all of a sudden it's double. You do need to have a little bit of a meeting at the end of the week and just talk about it. What did we do different this week? Why all of a sudden is it different? Sometimes you walk away from the meeting and you go, well, I don't know. I can't figure out what it was. Sometimes you figure out, oh, it was Groundhog Day. Or sometimes you're like, oh, you know what? I stopped telling them this, or I stopped escorting them to this point when they walked out. I stopped, like, a lot of times it's stuff that's so small. Like, so, you know, like the basic concepts of feng shui. Feng shui is just wind and water, and it's the way it moves through like an area, right? So all you have to do is put one little statue or something in the way of a water flow, and it diverts flow, or it moves it, or it changes it, or it reverses it. It's the same way with patients. Most of the time, these things that happen, it is something that you and your staff did. It is not something that you did intentional or something that you did wrong. It's just like you just didn't do the exactly right thing.
Do you have any systems around getting reviews, testimonials, or referrals? And I guess maybe I'll preface this by saying that lately I've been in the business of selling review courses. And like, if I want to sell review courses, there's a lot of ways I can do it. I can have Facebook ads. I can have Google ads. I can make content. I can have lead magnets and email funnels and all these things. But I've kind of found that if I have a lot of reviews, testimonials, and if I have a good word of mouth, that just makes everything easier. The conversion is always easier. And I've kind of discovered that, like, I actually have to make a system around that. I can't just sit around hoping that somebody will say, hey, I really liked your thing. I actually had to build that into the customer journey or the customer experience that at this point, I'm gonna ask them, could you write me a review, or could you, or if you really like this, please tell your friend. Is it possible to do that with acupuncture?
So I'll tell you two sides of this. And first of all, I'll tell you that I'm not the guy for this, right? What my focus has always been, this is when I started making money, when my focus was no longer on making money, when it was on making people better, helping people and making people happy. That's as simple as that. When my focus was on money, it didn't go as well, right?
Yeah.
which I think is a really, really good lesson to learn. And that's what you'll hear a lot of people that are successful say. So also, I come from the age where we were all scared as crap of Yelp, because Yelp screwed so many people so hard, it wasn't even funny. So we were not about reviews. That has calmed down. So now we've got a generation of acupuncturists coming up that reviews are important. And what you just said, the one thing that you just said right in the middle of saying that was the most important thing. It's the ask. You know, if somebody really, really likes like what you do, and that's the most important thing. You've got to have a good product. You know what I mean? And you know, some people would argue that you don't have to have a good product. Like the Pet Rock made $1 million, which in today's numbers are like $100 million on selling a rock. You know what I mean? So that there is that. But with what we do, you have to have a good product. So you get your product tight, right? And then you ask, because a lot of times if you ask, they will do it. And I've seen even people, I thought this was actually brilliant the few times that I've saw it or seen it. If you would like to give us a 5-star review, please, you know, go to our QR code or click this or whatever. And making it easy is really important too. So if you put it at the front desk and you put a little QR that they can just like click.
Oh,
and
yeah,
do it.
Yeah, like a little sign that just says,
yeah, okay. Yeah, a little sign. And that one statement I thought was brilliant. If you would like to give us a 5-star review. Well, I mean, why would you ask somebody to give you a review that's going to give you a 1-star review? If you would like to give us a great review, and just put the wording in there and make it as simple and as humble as possible. There's some people, the cool thing about our profession, again, whether it's clinic or topical or whatever it is, there are people that we will touch way, way, way more in value than the treatment that they got. You know what I mean? That we gave them a couple $100 worth of treatment and we changed their lives. And these people would love, I feel like in the universe, there needs to be an exchange. And this isn't all hippy dippy or anything like that, but this is really real. You know, the people that don't show up to your treatments, they're the people that you want to give them for free or discount. They're the ones that don't show up. If you don't charge anything, they're the ones that are good to be like, oh, all of a sudden they don't show up last minute or whatever. So they want an exchange, and I would want an exchange. I would feel bad about getting a treatment for nothing. Now, if I give somebody something, if I trade somebody something, you know, an exchange is an exchange. So, the ask and make it, you got to make it really simple for it. I'm starting to be a little bit more embracing to QR codes, because now even the oldsters know how to use them, where they just put it on their phone and they click and then it takes them right to the little spot and they can Google review you or whatnot. In this conversation, run from Yelp. Don't do Yelp. Yelp. If you've ever spent any time with it, it is, and you might like it. It might have changed since I did it before, but it can be so. They might not anymore. They used to have some very deceptive business practices.
Yeah, so, and they used to be very predatory about getting you to spend money. That's like, oh, I'll just create an account for free, and then you get like 5 phone calls a day.
Or they would wipe out all of your good reviews and just leave the bad ones, and then say, well, would you like to you'd like to change that? Now, I will say this, that if you embrace reviews, so this is why we haven't really embraced any reviews except on our own websites and whatnot. Is that if you're going to embrace reviews, you have to be prepared that the reviews will not be changed by the reviewer. So you can get a review of your clinic from somebody that was never even there, that totally made it up or whatever, and you just have to resolve yourself to realizing that Google is not going to take that off of there. They're not going to do it. So your best strategy with that is to like flood it with good reviews. And I'm not saying make up accounts to flood it with good reviews, which there's businesses that do. B&H, by the way, B&H Photo in New York is one of those that I had some experience. Oh, so you do too. Experience with about 10 years ago, where they had all these fantastic reviews, 5,000 fantastic reviews. Turns out in their call center, what they do is they have people with many, many, many email accounts that do good reviews all day long for them. But since we're not like that, but I'll also tell you this, which is an encouragement. And again, like I said, this is my opinion. Yelp may have changed. But bad reviews are good. Bad reviews are good. So I got, for my clinic, I got this review from some guy that was just a wacko. That was a local guy that I called out on something that was really shady and weird that he was doing or something. And so he puts this review in about how he came to my clinic and how I was this and that and the other. Anybody that knows Chinese medicine, anybody that knows me, could read it and realize that it was 100% crap, right? So if something like that happens, I do encourage you to answer it in a very neutral way. Like my particular response was, you have never been in my clinic. You know, I didn't say anything negative. I said, you have never been in my clinic. I'm not sure exactly whose clinic you went to, but this cannot be about me. I would welcome the opportunity to discuss this with you more if you would just contact me in person, but you never have. You know, so it wasn't like I was disparaging the person, et cetera. So a good bit of diplomacy with things like that. But that's what people want to see. If I look at somebody's site and I see like 100% five-star reviews. I'm like, well, I want to see what some crazy person thought sucked. I really do. Cause that's what it is. Like if you got a place that's got all five-star reviews and then you've got like five crazy ones, they're crazy. And you want to see it. Oh, like I used this on my blah, blah, blah. And it did this and this. And you're like, what? Anyway, so.
Yeah, and I feel like that's one of those things where it depends on where you are too. Whereas I feel like in San Diego, a lot of people looked at Yelp and a lot of people did internet shopping. Whereas like in Louisville, Kentucky, it was more about word of mouth. I guess, do you do anything to specifically encourage that? Say, bring in your friends or anything like that?
So I have to go historically, and again, so what you just touched on is something that's really, really important. If I had a clinic in St. Petersburg, Florida, we would be having a completely different conversation about my opinions on Yelp and about a bunch of other things too. But when I talk about community type things, the most important thing that I can do is be as good to these people as possible. That doesn't mean, and please, new people, like, listen to what I'm saying. That doesn't mean to give your services away. That doesn't mean not to charge appropriately for your services. You are extremely valued, and that's what keeps your value there. But if you do the best, the worst that people can say when they leave my place, let's say somebody says they saw me for five or six times and it just didn't work or nothing happened. You know what they can't say? They can't say that I didn't work really freaking hard and we didn't really freaking try. You know what I mean? So I think that is your best community mouthpiece that you're going to get, is that you make sure that you communicate to each person exactly what the expected outcomes are. And I do that all along the way. So let's say that it's session two or session three. I'm like, look, you're well ahead of where I expected you would be. Right now, we're just in this phase where we have to stabilize things. We have to solidify the pattern. We have to whatever. I'm like, sometimes it takes two sessions with some people. Sometimes it takes six. Sometimes it takes one. And I also, there's a point. This is an interesting point that I tell people that people may or may not agree with me. I've been doing it long enough where I see this point in them getting better, and what I called before fruition, right? Where I know they're going to get better no matter what I do. I know they're going to get better. And I tell them, I'm like, every single time that I feel them at that point, that three quarters point, I tell them, I'm like, look, you are going to get better no matter what I do. What I do is just going to get you there quicker. And you know what happens every single time? They actually come in for more sessions than they need, which is always good for me, because even when I correct a problem, I've still got like a laundry list of things I'd love to correct with this person, but just don't have the opportunity to because I was too focused on whatever. So I think if you could work on one anything to create that community buzz, so to speak, it's just that communicating really, really well with your patients. But the other thing too, and again, I don't know how this works, how well this works in a big city, because I told you I hated, you know, practicing in St. Pete, but it still does kind of apply. I would really, really recommend that not only do you go out and do things, and when you go out and do these things, you take your credit card and you pay for them as a tax deductible expense, whatever it is that you do, because believe it or not, the numbers on what we can deduct on taxes are stupid. They're meant for bigger business. They're stupid. So as an example, I ran a clinic for many, many years that was 200 to 250K or so, like gross, with no more ever, no year ever more than $500 worth of tax liability.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So, and that's what people do. Like when people are setting up things in the beginning, they're like, oh, I got to hide from the taxes because I can't pay them. I can't whatever. No. What you have to do is you just have to use your stuff to write the right things off, because they're not taxable income, or they're only taxable at certain percentages. Right. So you can easily run a 250, maybe even up to 275 or $300,000 clinic without actually having almost any tax liability whatsoever. I mean, $500 is nothing in the grand scheme of things. So anyway, go and do stuff, and This is so outside. It's Dr. Mark 100%, but it's so outside of Mark. Like, walk into the place where you're going to buy something silly that you know that you've just got the manager, you've just got the owner, and just tell them exactly who you are. Just say, look, I'm the witch doctor. I'm the guy that owns the place across the street. And what happens is, the more that you do that, the more people start to go, oh, you're the guy. I heard about you, whatever. So all of a sudden you gain a reputation. Now, the thing is, even in a bigger market, you're like, well, the market's so big, there's 2 million people in St. Pete. But are there 2 million people in the circle that you would run through that has all the circle of the people that would come to you run through? No, there's not. You know, there's not going to be people like that at the herb school or at the acro yoga place or at this distillery or at this whatever. There, you know, there it becomes a much smaller place when you narrow your market. And don't even get me started on this, but target market. Like, if you are new in business or new in doing what we do and you don't know what target market is, you need to 100%, 1000% school yourself on target market, and everything that you do needs to be geared towards engaging target market. That is the exact person that's going to come to see you. And I've heard that poo-pooed so many times, but that is gold. Anyway, that's another soapbox.
Another thing I've seen you post, I don't know if I'm getting this on 100% correct, but it was something about selling product and something about a certain percentage of your revenue should come from selling products. And this was a little bit new to me because when I first started, I didn't feel comfortable doing that. And then I started looking at gyms and I saw that some gyms, it's like 50% of their revenue comes from selling supplements. And I think you might have said something like 20% should come from. Do you have a benchmark about selling product?
Yeah, I really do. And that sort of reminds me of what we were just talking about a little bit, about people having a problem with charging for their services and whatnot. And there's that whole thing where you have to be strong to give strength. So you really have to look at, with all of the things that you charge, you have to make sure that you're not only paying your bills, but you're doing well. And that was really hard for me too. Because if you're not doing well, you might not be able to practice long. That's what happens. The people that undervalue their services or their products or everything that they're doing, they don't get to do it for very long. They get out of the business and get into something else within 3 to 5 years very, very easily. But I just couldn't make any money in it. No, you were just undervaluing what you were doing. You know what I mean? So that 20%, I think the 20% is a nice minimum. And this, I think, I have to qualify that with saying that this is when we're talking about people that are herbalists. And I'm not talking about the 25% coming from inflating prices or whatnot. So as you probably know, it's really hard to inflate prices too much these days because Amazon. You know, Amazon and the online sellers, you know, even some of the places that have been known, like when you shop at them for inflated prices, they can't get away with it anymore because people just go online and they'll find something and they would rather do that. Now, where we're really, really lucky is that Chinese medicine, especially herbs and herbal products, are not like that yet because people have an inherent distrust for them. And the distrust comes from, it does come from a valid place, because what doctors will see is they'll see the worst of the worst. They'll see when somebody comes in that has gotten like Chinese herbal products from a gas station or from some herb shop, and they've not just taken one like they were supposed to, they've taken like 18 different things all at once and didn't realize that they combined them, and now their livers, you know, they've got jaundice and whatnot. So I have a lot of people that come into my clinic that will, I'm like, you can just order these online. You order them, you know, you get them very regularly. No. I just want to get them from you because they know that I vet everything, right? But it's getting harder and harder to find places and sources where you can get these formulas and not have too much of a markup and still make money, right? Because like the margin is changing so much with the information age. I used to use Guangxi Tong brand, Activerb, which was Guangxi Tong brand. And I stopped using them because what they did is they all of a sudden started marketing massively to the public, and the public can buy them for, to their door ends up coming to about $15, right? Which is what I used to sell them for in the clinic. You know, sure, you get them for $350 to $550 a bottle, but still, if they're selling them for the same thing online, it's not only that it undercuts you, but it also undercuts your prescription of them. And as we know, with Chinese herbs, prescription is everything. So what I would get is these people that I haven't seen in years calling me and like, I've got these like 10 different formulas and I'm like getting sicker and sicker and I don't know what's going on. Because they ordered them online and, you know, blah, blah, blah. So anyway, so I switched to Lecon, which is the same factory, you know, just different. But what happens is if you're prescribing appropriately, or let's say, for instance, is even something like vitamins, like some of the supplements that we carry. I tell people, look, we carry these just for convenience. You can get them online or you can get them wherever. Believe it or not, people come in for them all the time from us because they know the source. We've vetted them for them. We're in a world where you can get everything. But when I say get kelp supplements, there's 20 different to choose from. So they would just rather come and pick them up for me than whatever. So, you know, your basic multivitamin, multimineral, we carry some electrolyte solutions. We have a bunch of different teas. Prince of Peace is a really good one. There's a few others that I can post some stuff on that are just good, you know, solid brands that are Chinese medicine formulas, but are in tea form. Obviously, Evil Bone Water. With Evil Bone Water, one of our things is our wholesale is, what, $11, $12 a unit? And we don't let anybody retail online for less than 40. So if you sell it for anything, you know, less than 40 in your clinic, you're a hero. That's what we're trying to do. We're trying to create that. But in order to create something like that, people have to get over their thought that they are selling somebody something. When I prescribe somebody something in my clinic, I am not absolutely 100% not selling them anything. I am 100% prescribing them something. And what I'm doing is I'm giving them exactly what they need in the exact proportions that they need. And I'm also giving them something that they would not have found on their own or somewhere else. They just simply wouldn't have. Now, when it's not something like that, so the multivitamin, the kelp, the electrolyte drink, the whatever it is that we sell, those other little things, I tell them, I'm like, look, you can pick them up, this up anywhere. There's 1 in 100 patients that says, I'll buy it online. 1 in 100. Seriously, they just buy it. Now, is our markup fantastic? No, but it very, very easily makes up 20% of our income for the month. Now, here's what's cool about that. Here's what starts when you like cultivate that, right? So you see these people and you see these people for years, and we do a lot of this. Somebody calls on the phone. I got this going on. Oh, just come and pick up some herbs in the box outside. We do that all the time. We have a little box out there. We'll just leave them for them. They can pay online. They can leave money in the box. You know, with as cheap as our stuff is, there's a little bit of a trust thing, but I'm also in a small community, right? But then what ends up happening is the more years that you practice, the more people are just picking stuff up all the time. Like I'll walk by treating people. I'll walk by the front desk and I'll see some people that I've never seen before in my entire life picking up like $50 worth of stuff. And I'll hear the conversation as I pass and they're just picking it up for a loved one or somebody else that needed it or whatever that used to use it and blah, blah, blah. So what happens is it's not like it's this tiny linear growth that happens when you start embracing products like that. When I say products, prescriptions like that, what happens is it's this exponential growth where all of a sudden every year it's like greater and greater and greater, and it's passive income. So all of a sudden, let's say for instance that your clinic did $20,000 in services last month, right? Well, that means that you did about $4,000 in stuff that you didn't even have to put your hands on. And I think that's incredible. Like if you look at in a very small conservative Georgia, you know, whatever town, last time we looked at it, which was several years ago, we moved, I forget what it was, but it was over double the amount of herbal formulas that we had patient treatments.
Oh, wow.
And I was actually really super proud about that because when I first started there, I actually had to give patients herbs to make them use them, like give them 3 or 4 days just to make them use them. Because that's a Southern thing that if you give them something, they'll feel bad if they don't use it.
Yeah.
But anyway, but yeah, it can be a significant part. And And that's my, if there could be one takeaway from that with people, it's you're not selling. You are providing somebody with the perfect thing that they need. Do you know in an information age when they think they can have all sorts of information, do you know how confusing it's become? And you're going to provide them with the perfect thing that they need to correct their problem. That's like priceless.
Yeah, and I guess that was my issue starting out was just how do I do this with integrity? Because I've known chiropractors that's like they're just pushing a bunch of standard process shakes and stuff. And it's like, do I really need this? Or are you just like trying to up your income 20%? So just doing that with integrity was a challenge. Do you have like standard products for standard conditions? Like I think I recently saw you post something like, this is our gout package. Like, do you have things like if somebody's like, my herpes is acting up, what do I do? You can say, oh, we got these things. Come pick them up.
You know, so we kind of do. And we'll use the standard combos if it's a person that isn't coming into us or we haven't seen in a very long time. So with those, you want to stay almost consumer grade where you're not going to cause any harm. If they come in, obviously you're going to dial it really, really well in. But one thing that happened, you've probably seen some posts where over the past 20 years, we started to get in a lot of Chinese medicine teas that come in. So if you go into an Asian grocery, they're in the tea section. The tea section is as long as the bread aisle, right? But they're actually really, really solid formulas. So a lot of times when I do something that's what I call consumer grade and non-diagnostic grade, I try to keep it, you know, at the mile high view. And it's usually one of those teas. And sometimes it's a topical, or sometimes it's like one of those no-brainer formulas that we know isn't going to hurt anybody. And those, you know, those can be kind of significant. And when I say significant as far as sales go, is let's say that you're using something as simple as one of the gout teas. All of the gout teas in Chinese medicine work, and they work like mad. Oh, well, I need allopurinol. I need this and that. No, if you try these teas, they freaking rock. They really, really do. It, like, even across brands. So what'll happen, and also the Chinese formulas that are for kidney stones and the ones that are for gallstones, those rock too, and they don't put you through anything. So the combination, so say we're talking about gout or we're talking about UTI or kidney stones, the combination of the tea and that, I said, and I don't charge that much for herbs. You know, I charge every bottle I sell is $15, right? Every tea I sell is $10. So what I do is I just split the difference. I don't, you know, I've told people before, I'm a chainsaw, not a scalpel. So like I'll lose some, I'll gain some. We always win. You make sure you always win. But somebody's got kidney stones, somebody's got gout, whatever. Those are my two. They get a tea, they get a formula. But what happens is they get that impactful thing like we talked about with patients before, even though I've never seen them before. They get that impactful thing. And you know what they do? They come in 4 times a year to pick that stuff up, because if you've had a kidney stone or a gallstone or whatever, you don't want it again.
So speaking of product, you make evil bone water. I'm kind of, well, first of all, I think you've had some upgrades. I've seen pictures of you buying big vats and stuff, or pictures of you showing off herbs. And some of the conversations we've had have been around herb quality. And I think this is something that not a lot of people know about, that basically I had somebody leave a comment that was like, oh, well, you can get quality herbs anywhere. What do you mean by imperial grade herbs? What is this?
So I'm going to use what I always use just because it's a familiar thing to people. We have 11 herbs, or we have 11 ingredients, actually 12 if you can include the water. And I will happily include the water now, because our water is freaking awesome now. But anyway,
I've seen you do some things with water, but we can get to that.
We're just doing stupid stuff with water. It's unnecessary, but I, you know,
but it sounds like the kind of thing you would do.
It makes me happy. right. There you go. You know me. So let me use cinnamon like as a vehicle for this, because it is something that everybody's familiar with. And when I say familiar, it's something that everybody has used, everybody has had, everybody has experienced on so many different levels, and you just don't realize it. So where we go into the quality, I used to order when I would make things, and I didn't make internal medicine formulas for people, but I would make things on occasion for family or just for clinic, and sometimes topicals, et cetera, dermatology type things. So I would order from like the best in America, right? So we've got six wholesalers in America. Is that what we have? Maybe six, eight.
That sounds
or something,
about right.
Yeah, something like that. And so, when you order the best, and these are supposed to be, we're Chinese medicine physicians, we're herbalists. When you order the best that they're giving us is pesticide-free, you know, non-GMO. And what's the other one that they do?
Occasionally sulfur-free or organic.
Yeah, yes, sulfur-free or organic. Organic. So you just hit all the top four, right? That's what they hit. So when I was ordering from these places, I was assuming that that was it. That was the quality. That was what we get. All right. So then when I started ordering Imperial Grade, I got these herbs in and I looked at them and I was like, what am I even looking at? Like in some cases, it did not even look like the same herb. I'm like going, what am I seeing? What is different? So what we don't know is that, or a lot of us don't know, and we're not taught in school. So I had a really, really weird school experience because we had these 18 double doctors from China that were all like heads of their department and stuff. So our herbal pharmacy was this amazing herbal pharmacy where I used to do a lot of my studying. I didn't realize we had these 3-gallon jars that had really top quality herbs that they used their connections to get the top quality in. So I didn't really realize that. But anyway, I start getting these Imperial Grade in. And yes, do they cost more? 100%. They're probably 50 to 75% more. I mean, they are. That's just it. I'm paying, but I also look at it, and if I'm paying $30 for a kilo of, like, say, for instance, Huzhong, right? And then I'm paying $70 for a kilo of Huzhong, and I see the difference. Is $70 really all that much?
Like, yeah, especially, I was going to say that doesn't sound like very much compared to some of like low quality ginseng versus high quality ginseng
can be a lot. Well, that is that's the wild card. Ginseng is a wild card. So what I didn't realize is until I started doing this. So the first time that I ordered my Imperial herbs in, I get them, and for 3 weeks I am like, it's almost like I'm walking on air around the clinic and annoying pretty much everybody that walks in because I'm showing them these herbs and they're just looking at me like I'm insane. But, you know, the only thing that I can show them is the cinnamon because the cinnamon sheets are as big as my torso and they're like, I've never seen that before. And then you break it and you smell all sorts of like weird but familiar things, etc. But then after 3 weeks, I'm like, well, wait a minute. I used to order this stuff from the best in America and what is the difference? And it's just, it's a hard, oh, we got. Oh,
yeah, I'm hoping he doesn't type on the keyboard. Sometimes he likes to do that.
So what it is the wholesalers don't sell our American wholesalers anything except for about BNC quality. BNC quality, I do not want you to get it wrong. BNC quality is not bad. It is very, very good. It is great for patient care. It is great for whatever. But there's grades above that. So the Chinese herb market is insane. It's billions and billions of dollars. It's like our agricultural markets here. It's like pork belly. It's like, you know, oil. It's like whatever. So there's A, there's AA, there's AAA, and then there's above. So above Imperial Grade is essentially what used to be used for the emperor. It's the highest grade available at that given time on the market. And so when you get it, what it is there's not only all of those other things that we talked about, no pesticides, no chemicals, no GMO, sustainably sourced, you know, blah, 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 blah. But they've also been microscopically tested for genus, species, and density of medicine. That's like the most important thing, density, to be able to basically prove that that's what it is. So when I go back to the cinnamon thing, we think cinnamon is cinnamon is cinnamon. Turmeric is turmeric is turmeric. Lavender is lavender is lavender. And so the fragrant cinnamon in America is from 1 to 3-year-old trees that are generally from Sumatra. That's where all the flavorful stuff comes from. Now, what we have to watch out for I can't remember which one it is. It's a cinnamonium something or another that's actually a little bit toxic that sometimes they'll sell. So if you get cheap, flavorful cinnamon, it's actually got a little toxicity to it that they don't talk about. So then it's not medicinal at all, really. I mean, a little bit. When I say at all, a little bit. But when you get from 5 to 15 years, the medicine moves from the bark into the stems and the twigs, which is Arguijuan or Guipi or Gui, whatever it is. It's those two, which have slightly different, you know, properties to them. And so that's where the medicine is. But after 15 years, it moves to the bark. It all migrates. So in these trees that are 20 years, 25, 20, or 30 years old, there's not much medicine in the twigs and the stems. The bark is where it's really at. And it's really, really dense and it's really, really rich. And so that's kind of the difference, you know. Now, if you want to get technical about it, let's say, for instance, that I had a formula that required 10 grams of guijia, right? So cinnamon twig, right? I could use guipi. I could use the imperial grade guipi, and I could probably use half and get the same effect, right? So what we do as far as our formula goes is I formulated it based on what the regular formula was, and I don't dial it back down. The only way that I would have ever dialed it differently is if for some reason I could only get like regular grade or B or C grade or A grade, then I would have to increase that one particular herb. And the one time that that almost happened during the pandemic, I just couldn't do it. I let everybody wait a month to get the herbs because the difference was so vast. So we were talking about chunks of Azure that were this big at imperial grade and pieces that were this big otherwise. So the density of medicine just wasn't there. And we just don't get it, you know, like, and I think that's what accounts for a lot of when people try something that's herbal and it doesn't work for them. All right. Or whatever. So when I look at a substance, a natural substance that works for some people and doesn't for others, let's say, for instance, 70% of the people it works for and then 30% it doesn't. What almost always is at play is either the quality or a lot of times like the dosage, right? So there's some things that don't meet my high bar of people using in clinic because the dosage is so high, the expense is so much, it just doesn't make sense. But sometimes it's the quality too. Like I said, lavender isn't lavender isn't lavender. Like, oh, I tried lavender and it didn't relax me. Did you try really good lavender? And then they do and they're like, oh, wait, that's way different. So anyway, that's what we do. We get literally at the time of purchase the best on the planet we possibly can get. And this year, we've already done this a little bit. But we're going to start getting the best of the best at harvest time too. So there's a handful of herbs that don't really matter. Half our herbs don't really matter. But there's some that if you get them at harvest time, I mean, they're going to be great at the end of the line, but they're not going to be as good as they are at harvest time. Harvest time, they're going to be like the creme of the crop.
Yeah, and I feel like cinnamon is a good example just because I remember when I was in school, my Chinese teacher used that as an example where he got to tour some big herb factory and he said, "What's the most expensive thing here?" And he actually showed him cinnamon bark. And it was like, I was kind of like, oh, I usually get cinnamon bark for like $5 a pound. And this was like $80 or several hundred dollars. And it was like, no, this is kind of purplish in color. It was really oily. So if you rubbed it on paper, it would like leave a grease spot. And it was like, you could actually chew it. It wasn't just like eating wood. You could actually chew it and like all these different things. And I think that, I mean, for a while I just assumed quality meant like, oh, it's organic and gluten-free when, I don't know, maybe a good analogy is like when you get matcha tea, they have different grades. There's like culinary grade and standard grade and ceremonial grade. As I was thinking that, I think like maybe whiskey is a good example too, where like you have some whiskeys that's like, oh, you can use this for cooking, or you can mix this in Coke and it'll be totally fine. But then they have like the really well aged barrel that it's like, this is really expensive, and like you don't mix this with anything. You just sip it and appreciate the flavor.
You know, that's a good analogy because what happens in the barrel. So I'll be able to announce this later in the summer or something like that. But I've done a lot of studies, hours and hours every day of studies in the past 3 months on distillation, on brewing, on all sorts of things. And so what you get in a whiskey or a bourbon is you get a chemical interaction with the barrel that happens over time that basically increases the density of flavors. It increases the complexity of the flavors. But that same chemical reaction that we're talking about with flavor, so to speak, is something that happens with the aging of herbs, with the aging of the herb on the vine, the herb in the ground. You know, so when we talk about something like a Sanchi or a Renshin, like a ginseng, they're not even any good until they've been in the ground 5 or 10 years. You know what I mean? And then the longer they've been in the ground, the more the density of medicine. That's an interesting one, by the way. I will just mention this as a quick aside. So we did some calculations yesterday, one of my really good friends, with all the stuff that you need with analytics to tell you how much your cost per bottle. And the interesting thing was, I'm like, well, geez, I don't think that our cost per Sanchi is enough. Let me increase the cost per Sanchi. And he looked at me and he's like, you know, that's not what businesses do. They normally look how they can decrease it. And I'm like, well, I don't think it costs enough per bottle. I'm like, we can do more. And so, but this is one of the cases. It's the only herb that we don't use imperial grade, because imperial grade is stupid expensive. The ginseng family and the pseudo ginseng family, they go up so high. And so what happened is, my agent ended up talking to our quality people that are the science people. They're the ones that do all of the, like, under the microscope and this, that, and the other. And they said the next two grades up, which would get you three times like the cost, they said, actually have the same density of medicine. You don't get a different density of medicine until you go above that. And I love all you guys, but I'm not paying $1,000 a kilo for Sanchi. I'm just, there's at a point. This is what I call grandma grade. I would be happy with my grandma using this, but no, it's like, what's so interesting to me is I consider myself like a high level herbalist for 20 years or more, 20, 25 years. And when I started learning about what real high level herbalists are in China, I'm like, I know nothing. So quality. So what I would encourage people to take away from this conversation that we just had is, if you have tried something that you really think should have worked for you on paper and it didn't work for you, you know, whatever it happens to be that's herbal, I would encourage you to recheck the quality and recheck the dose, because most of the time it's either quality or dose that cause something not to work, unless, as you know from a Chinese medicine, as a physician, it didn't fit the person's constitution or pattern. You know what I mean?
Can you say something about the manufacturing process?
The process for making a topical medicine for healing has been the same for hundreds of years, maybe even longer, for thousands of years. You take a bunch of herbs, you put them in about 60 to 80% alcohol. 60% is what used to be pretty typical. And you let them sit for 6 months or longer. You shake them every once in a while, you stick them in the ground, you whatever.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's what I feel like that's what I did in school. We had a project where we had to make a dit de jiao, and it's like, oh, we just got some herbs together and put them in a jar, and you wait for a while.
Yeah.
And then I see your stuff, and it's like, you got all these tanks, you're talking about temperatures and pressures, and well, what's going on there?
Well, and so, you know, it occurred to me it occurred to me when I first started making it, I'm like, that doesn't really seem super inefficient, because, not to get too sciencey, but essentially what you're trying to do is you're trying to extract the alcohol soluble medicine and the water soluble medicine. So 60% alcohol is a really good happy medium where you're going to get the water soluble stuff, you're going to get the alcohol soluble stuff. You'll never get either one of them completely or perfectly, but you'll get them both decently the longer you leave them in a ground. So if I leave them in a ground for 10 years or whatever, shaking them every once in a while, then I'll probably get all of it. But I don't, to make something commercially, I don't have 10 years. I can't have 10-year batches going on. So I'm like, well, what's the best water-soluble decoction? Or excuse me, extraction. It's a decoction, right? What's the best alcohol? Well, it's an alcohol extraction, but after it's softened from a water decoction, you've got a better opportunity at it. But also, I was finding that if you step up the amount, the percentage of alcohol, your extraction becomes way, way, way better. So we start off with it at about 60%. Then after a few days, we go to 70, 80, 90. Then after a few days, we go to whatever. So we eventually get to our full percentage of alcohol by doing a stepped extraction. So anyway, I guess long story short on what the process is, what started as doing a simple decoction and then letting things alcohol extract after that, adding alcohol to stabilize it and extract it for like a couple of weeks, has turned into this really, really interesting but weird thing. So what we do now is all of our herbs start with a water soak, which is, believe it or not, it's a fermentation, which we found out that it is actually producing alcohol, whether it's from the natural yeast that are in the air or natural, there's all kinds of fermentation. It's not just yeast that ferments. You can ferment with mold, you can ferment with all sorts of things. But anyway, so there's a fermentation that goes on because we get a foaming and we actually get a percentage of alcohol, small, but that's produced in those 3 days. We extend that by adding a little bit of a thin layer of boha now to the top, which prevents any microbial growth, which is really kind of cool. We did that accidentally. So we have this fermentation that goes on, right? That just is super cool. How much it helps, I don't know. But then we go into a traditional decoction, right? So, which is basically you low boil, you bring to a boil as quickly as you can, and then you low boil for about 20, 25 minutes. We do still add our cinnamon at the end, but I'm not sure that it's necessary because our cinnamon has already undergone an alcohol extraction separately for a couple of months. Like we do an alcohol extraction because we don't want to miss those volatile oils out of it. So we could probably add that some other time. And then what we do is after that, we put in just enough alcohol to stabilize it, which is where all the tanks come in. We put in just enough alcohol to stabilize it, which is bringing it up to about 40% alcohol, right? And then over the course of the next weeks, we stir it. Now we're stirring by air, by compressed air that we have it swirling, which actually is even better because the process of aeration we found has a lot of chemical reactions that go in it that I don't quite understand, but that's the old thing that you read from 500 years ago of them shaking, shake, 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 is basically aeration, right? So we aerate it by going compressed air on a, what they call a tangential swirl that we end up doing. We do crazy stuff here. Well, and what it is it's like you do the same thing over and over again, and people are like, don't you get bored? No, I keep finding ways to make it better. And they're like, why do you have to make it better? I'm like, because I want to and I can. I mean, why not? So we swirl it, and then by the end, it should come out almost perfectly to somewhere between 70 and 75% alcohol, which brings everything into solution. So all the tanks are basically necessary to do that process. And now we're up to, I've got a 300-gallon batch that's soaking right there, which I thought, so scaling is always difficult. Like scaling is not this little linear thing, which you just double the herbs or you just triple the herbs. It's not like that because things behave differently at scale. But honestly, these batches are behaving so freaking like beautifully. There's all these things I look for, like when I clarified it on the final day to make it the product that you receive. There's a milkshake. There's like these globules. There's like this foaming that happens. There's these bubbles that are all rainbow looking that all happen at certain times, and it happens perfectly. And what it was is it was another one of the quality changes that we did, which was the water. So instead of using just regular water, we have this multiple filtration system that also UV sterilizes, but then at the end ionizes. And so what I think it's doing, and I'll post some stuff about it soon, is I think what that's doing, as opposed to like RO water, like reverse osmosis or distilled water, is just has nothing in it, right? So this is like a softened water, because there's salt involved in the process and gravel and charcoal and all that. But at the end, we ionize it. So whatever happened, it's not only less dissolved particles when we start with it, but also the ionization allows it to soak like more of the herbs into solution. So we're ending up with, you know, instead of this much sediment at the bottom of a 300-gallon tank, we're ending up with like this much sediment, which is, you know where the sediment is? The sediment is dissolved into the product, which is what we've been trying to get in there forever. So we had gone down this road of, anyway, I was going too far with that. Like that's what we do around here. I sit here and I drive my people crazy because they're like, why would you try to do this or try to do that? Everything that we're doing is great. And I'm like, well, why can't we just do like a little bit extra? We're already doing this. Why not get something extra? Why not make it cooler? And what my hope is like with what I learned about the water. And if you ever look into, I told you I'm doing a lot of research into distilling and brewing in the industry for things that people drink. Water, all the big distillers and brewers, they talk about it, but they don't talk about it much, but they are obsessed with it. Because what is in your water when you start to make your brew, when you start to make your mash, when you start to make, in my case, my decoction, well, my fermentation, what is in there is so important as to extraction. It's not even funny. So what I hope to be able to pass on from this is what the average person that's making for their clinic or their patients, or if they want to make something commercial, is going to be able to take on and say, look, this is what's important to this. This is how I'm going to extract the most I possibly can from these herbs. Because when you have something like guipi that's from 30 freaking year old trees from the mountains of Guangdong that's got all that medicine trapped inside, for you to like treat it like crappy and just, you know, sort of throw it in the end, it's kind of like a travesty. You're lucky to get it. And if you use a quarter of the medicine that you could possibly extract, I'm just like, well, that's stupid. And yes, all my staff thinks I'm crazy, but I mean, I love this stuff. This is what it's all about.
So the other big change I think you've had is have you sold your clinic or you're selling your clinic?
Yes. Yes.
And this was, I guess this is always kind of a confusing thing to me, because when you sell a business, I think one of the prerequisites is you have to remove the founder from the business. So it's like if it's the Mark Brinson show and people are coming to see Mark, as soon as Mark is not there, nobody wants to come to the business. And so I was always curious about like, how does that happen with an acupuncture clinic? How is it that people are coming to the business, but they're not coming to see the founding practitioner? I guess, how do you make that separation?
So you're exactly right. And this is something that's extremely important for our profession to get over so that we can start to step up, right? So if you look at, say, for instance, the chiropractic clinics, they sell and buy businesses very regularly. They are very well versed that to buy a clinic is way better than to go and set up a clinic. This is like something that they do like night and day. And if you look at what the cost of these clinics are, it's going to sound like a lot to the average person, but you're talking about usually between $80,000 and $200,000. It's really not that much if you look at skipping 3 years of business. You skip 3 years of struggle to walk yourself into $100,000 to $200,000 clinic, which your payment on that may be $800 a month or something like that. What's that? 8 treatments, right? And all of a sudden you walk into a full schedule, et cetera. So chiropractors are used to this. They just do it like it's nothing. You also have to remember that when you sell a business, every industry is different. So when you sell a business that's a clinic like that, your actual physical assets mean absolutely nothing. You know what I mean? Your books that you've taken so long to to curate and cultivate your tables, your STEM machines, your whatever. That's like this much. What really makes a difference is all of your patient files, your patient records, your contacts, your reputation in the clinic, your whatever, which all have a value, and it's called a valuation. And there's an actual valuation that you can and should get if you're interested in doing that with, it's usually accountants that do that, that are specific to it. I used many, many years ago, this is going to sound weird, but I just sold, I used maybe 9 years ago, somebody called Sam Reader, which I would recommend for their valuation, but don't expect them to do anything to sell your clinic because they absolutely will not. That's their promise. They tell you it's going to cost a couple $1,000s to evaluate your clinic, and we're going to, you know, sell it for you, and we're going to market it for you. They do nothing that they said as far as that goes, but their valuation is really good, and their valuation is probably not going to make you very happy because you're not going to think that you're going to think that there's much more value than that, et cetera. But this is what it's worth on paper, and what it's worth on paper is what people can get loans for. Which is why you would go through somebody like Sam Reader if you wanted to get a loan to buy a clinic. Or a lot of times with our profession these days, people are willing to finance you and with variable rates and things like that, which is, you know, just perfectly fine. So the two things that you need to do that I never did from the beginning, and I regret not doing many, many, 20 years ago, is first of all, if you go to set up your own business, just set it up like a business. Get yourself an incorporation, whether it's an LLC, whether it's a C Corp, whatever it is. It's not expensive. Just do it. Get yourself C Corp, LLC, right? Get yourself a business account. Do not commingle your accounts. Do not have your personal and your private account commingled, because that does not lead to selling a business. This is the one that people are going to yell at me about. Do not name your business Brinson Therapeutics or whoever, whatever, which is one of the things I did at first. You know, oh, it's going to be Brinson Therapeutics. You cannot sell Brinson Therapeutics to somebody else. My business is Saint Acupuncture and Wellness. All right. Saint Acupuncture and Wellness on St. Simon's Island is very, very sellable. Also, go ahead and get your business taxes done by an accountant. It's very, very cheap. And like I mentioned before, when we've talked together, that unless you're making over $250,000 to $300,000 gross, you should not be paying more than about $500 taxes with all the write-offs that you have. So if you are, then you need to look at some things seriously, because the taxes for lower business like that are really, really in our favor. So don't think that you're going to save money by doing it through your personal bank account, by just taking cash, by whatever. Don't do any of that crap. Just set it up like it's a business from the very beginning. The other thing is, I would highly recommend Square or PayPal. And the reason for that is, everybody's like, oh, I don't want to take credit cards. It's going to take 3%. People want you to take credit cards. People don't have cash. The $3 that you're going to like waste on that is absolutely nothing, and it's tax deductible. But here's the real thing. To get actual business credit, I cannot tell you how hard it is to get business credit. You don't. Business credit does not really exist, all right? What exists is them looking at your personal credit and then deciding if you're business credit worthy based on your cash flow, period. They're not looking at anything else. They're looking at your personal credit worthiness, and then they're looking at your cash flow. And then you can get business credit, right? But with Square and with PayPal, if you have a year, year and a half, 2 years of steady business, they will give you these actually really, really good term loans. And they'll offer them to you regularly that are business credit. They're like true business credit. So all of a sudden you'll see, wait, I can get a $10,000 loan, and they take it out of your weekly, actually your daily percentage based on how much it is. So let's say, for instance, that I took out a $20,000 loan from Square, right? Because I use Square, right? They would take 3% out of every daily take until it was paid off. And it's simple interest. It's not compounded interest. So both Square and PayPal are pretty much the same thing, and they're actually really excellent. So when they came out, I didn't need either one of those things. I took them both because what I wanted to do is I wanted to establish credit with them. So right now, even though our credit, even though our clinic is running, well, actually our clinic's running at a pretty good rate now, I could get $30,000 overnight with either one of those if I needed them, just with a click, and they would take it out percentage-wise. And I'll tell you this, after 30-some years of business, that's the only people that have ever given me actual business credit, and it's based on what you do. So, you know, the falsehood is, the thing is that you think when you first start out, oh, I'm just going to run under the radar because it's going to save me money to not pay the government, to not do this, to not do that. And it is totally, totally false. Business bank account. Pay your taxes. Get an S-Corp or LLC. Get Square. And like I said, if you are looking at taxes each year, business taxes, where you have to pay more than $500 and you're not making over $300,000, you're doing something completely wrong. Get the right people. And also, I will have to admit, it's really, really, really hard to find a good like business accountant. But if you're right, find the right person, they'll help you and, you know, like instruct you on all this kind of stuff. So let me tell you the other way around this. The other way around this is you do things all willy-nilly. You commingle your bank accounts, or you don't have a business bank account. But then what you do is you hire an accountant, which will probably cost you $3,000 to $5,000, and it needs to be a team of accountants. And they will go back 3 years, and they will extract all of the personal, all of the business. They will separate it. They will refile. You will have penalties. There will be this, there will be that, there and the other. And it can be done. But to sell a clinic, you need 3 years of business taxes. You need 3 years of business digitally to be able to sell a practice. And if you do, that's what they call maturing a practice. And I would highly recommend that even if you don't ever think that you want to sell a practice, to set it up that way. Because if you would have told me that I would be selling my practice on St. Simon's Island, I would have told you that would never happen. Even though that I had evaluated so long ago. But it's something that you should always plan for.
Yeah, and it seems like those are some like paperwork things that need to be in place in order for that to happen. Is there any strategy in terms of, I feel like if you want to sell a clinic, you need your patients need to be in love with the clinic and not necessarily the main practitioner, and that's what makes it sellable. Did you have any strategies around that of, you're going to hand this off to somebody else? Are they going to say, oh, well, now Susie's in this clinic, I wanted to see Mark, I'm going somewhere else?
So, you know, it's interesting that you say that, because that's one of the reasons that I balked for so many years with being told that I needed to sell, I needed to do this and that. What I think that we need in this profession, if anybody wants to step up and do it, is we don't need an acupuncture physician clinic broker. We need an acupuncture physician clinic matchmaker, totally a matchmaker, because what happens is we don't do chiropractic adjustments where you go in, you get popped, or you go in and you get some electric stims, some heat, you get popped and you walk out the door, or get a little 15-minute like prep massage and walk out the door. We rarely fall into, I guess, what you would call a sort of a standard, you know, type of practice. Now, when someone comes into my practice as an associate, I do try to give them a bit of a standard. I am like, when somebody comes in the door, it's 50 to 60 minutes door to door. There's 15 minutes of face to face or hands on. There's acupuncture. Then there's 5 minutes. Then they leave. Then you go, you know, you cycle and you repeat. So there is that that formula that you were talking about. There is that that standard that you're talking about. So they're very used to that. And when people come in, you know, you do that. But then at the same time, It's not going to be the same. It's not going to be the same person. So I think the best thing that you can do is to find somebody, find the right buyer. If you find somebody that practices or court somebody that practices very, very similar to you, that's where the gold happens. That's where it should be seamless. So actually, Sarah found me. She just happened to see something online and like it was very, very old. And like, is this you? Are you looking to sell your practice? And I knew her from business and I knew her from practice style and stuff like that. And I knew also her personality and that it would be a really good fit. And also, I think she had like 20 years experience in the dental industry. So I knew that part that we talked about that has to do with like bedside manner and whatever would be there. So, you know, I think that might be the most important thing. If you find the right, and listen, if you're looking for a clinic too, if you find a similar style person to buy their clinic, or a similar style person to buy your clinic, et cetera, I think that's where the gold is. And I wish we would have more of a matchmaker service. Because like right now, when you go to sell a clinic or go to buy a clinic, we don't really have a company like that. There's kind of a vacuum. And it could be extensive. Like seriously, let's say for instance that I wanted to go and set up in Denver or something like that. There's a ton of places in Denver. I'm different than they are. They're different than I am. But if I found a clinic that was very similar to mine, I would so totally go in and buy a clinic rather than just set up from the start on my own. Because I know what it takes those first 2 or 3 years. You know, it can be really, really bad. I would roll right in. And as long as we were the same style, bam, done. I start making money day one. So who's going to do it? Who's going to be our clinic matchmaker for the future?
Mark, thanks for being here. If people want to follow you or sell Evil Bonoir in their clinic, what's the best way to find you?
If you're in school for Chinese medicine, if you are a doctor of oriental medicine, if you practice acupuncture, the best way to find me is go to evilbonoir.com and you can sign up for a wholesale account. We have great terms for all you guys. You can follow me on Instagram, evilbonewater, or Facebook. Also, we are boosting this year the Evil Bone Water channel on YouTube, which is basically stuff that you can give your people to do homework. It's high-level stuff from when I used to teach, very succinct. That also is in a homework format for people that have something, say, for instance, the wrist, the neck, or whatever. But yeah.
Well, awesome. Thanks for taking the time to chat with me.
Yeah, thanks a lot. I always love talking with you guys, and I'm sure there will be some exciting things that will actually break to you first when they come up. Late summer should be really exciting. I can't wait.
Exciting changes.
I'm sitting here looking at the excitement. I just can't say anything or do anything yet.
So announcements coming soon.
Announcements coming soon.
Awesome. Mark, thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot, Nick.
If you would like to purchase Evil Bone Water, you can get single bottles from the Dragon Blood Balm store. There's a link in the description. Use code ND15 for 15% off. If you'd like to set up a wholesale account to sell Evil Bone Water in your clinic, we'll leave a link to that as well. This episode can be downloaded at podcast.tcmstudy.net/session25. As always, special thank you to the Patreon members for supporting everything we do. The podcast, the YouTube channel, and the website, tcmstudy.net. Thanks for being here, and we'll see you in the next one.